You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent News, your trusted source for seafood prices, news, and data. I'm Amanda Buckle, and this episode is proudly brought to you by Wisefish, a trusted seafood business solution with over 30 years of experience. Based in Iceland, which is once again dealing with an active volcano right now, Wisefish helps companies worldwide manage everything from fishing and farming to processing, sales, traceability, and carbon accounting, all in one integrated solution. We're excited to have Wisefish as the first ever sponsor of Catch the Current. Learn more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent. Well, August 1st, a great day for America, as President Donald Trump has posted on his Truth Social platform, has finally arrived. And as expected, it's been one chaotic ride. My co-host Lauren Castiglione has somehow duped me again and scheduled some work travel around Trump's Liberation Day tariff deadline. But I've got Undercurrent's very own editorial director, Cliff White, and EMEA deputy editor, Dan Gibson, joining me on the pod this week to talk about all the major trade news. So this is basically like the old game show, Deal or No Deal with Howie Mandel, if it had a baby with that Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman movie, Seven. What is the tariff rate? Cliff, let's start with India. What did Trump have in that briefcase slash box?
It's a 25% tariff! Well, that's not exactly what the Indian shrimp exporting industry is saying. Those are not their exact words. Dan will have more on this, but the tariff rate was higher than India expected. I think they were looking around at what other Asian exporting nations had received, and it was 19% for Indonesia, 20% for Vietnam. And especially the Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi has a special relationship with U.S. President Donald Trump. So I think there's surprise in India that 25% was the number that came out yesterday. That said, it sounds like the two parties are still negotiating. But Dan can talk about the impact here.
Yeah, the response in India has been one of bemusement and a certain degree of bewilderment, I think, as you rightly say there, Cliff. The expectation was that it would be something similar to Indonesia and to Vietnam's rates, if not better. But instead, he's just gone to Truth Social and announced 25%. Ah. And I mean, this presents a problem as a headline writer, because normally when the US president announces something, that's official, right? But doesn't really seem to work that way these days. So it's unclear as yet whether that is going to be the final rate, or if that's just another negotiating tactic that may be reversed in the next few days. But India is hugely dependent on the US. It's got 40% of all of its shrimp exports go to America. I mean, that's, you're talking $2.3 to $2.5 billion a year trade flow right there. To put that into comparison, last week the UK signed its own free trade agreement with India, and India does $100 million to the UK. And they're thinking, oh, we can get a 70% increase to $170 million, which, again, you put that up against the behemoth of their trade with America, it's a drop in the ocean. So realistically, they have been in competition with Ecuador for the US market, and I think having such a big gap between their tariff rate and Ecuador's tariff rate is less than ideal, to put it mildly. So they are going to be looking, I would imagine, to diversify to anywhere else that can take this extra volume that they have. And I could well see within the next few years Ecuador surpassing them as to become America's biggest supplier of shrimp, if this holds. I think otherwise in the short term, I mean, just looking at farm gate prices earlier this week, they've been coming up the last couple of weeks because it's the end of peak harvest season, so there's a bit of a raw material shortage. And I think at the same time, they were expecting, as I say, a better deal with America. So effectively, the 10% drop that they had in prices when the Liberation Day tariffs, I'm using air quotes here, Liberation Day tariffs were first announced, basically had that initial drop, and that's been wiped out in the last couple of weeks. And the people I spoke to yesterday and today have told me they fully expect that, you know, the market will sag once again if this holds.
The Southern Shrimp Alliance, an organization of shrimp fishermen, shrimp processors in the U.S. states of Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Louisiana, a whole list that goes on. They are extremely happy with this announcement. They put out a press release applauding Trump's move for the additional 25% tariffs because India is the single largest supplier of foreign shrimp to the U.S. markets. Now the 25% tariff on India announced Wednesday is bad, especially considering the amount of shrimp imported to the U.S. US, as I just spoke about, but it could always be worse. Remember that in early July, Trump slapped Brazil with a 50% tariff effective August 1st. And on Wednesday afternoon, the White House announced that Trump signed the executive order implementing the additional 40% tariff on Brazil, bringing the total tariff amount to 50%.
Yeah, no surprise here, but it's a finalization of that 50% rate. The prize is the justification that Trump used for this tariff. Number one, he cited political persecution of former President Jair Bolsonaro, and that's a little unusual to cite political persecution. And also, some of Bolsonaro's supporters have been banned or censored on social media or been requested by the Brazilian government to be censored. So that was mentioned by Trump. These are unusual reasons for tariffs. Usually they're economic reasons. So that might not fly legally, especially because the law that Trump is citing for these tariffs, there are 7 lawsuits challenging the president's ability or right to implement tariffs under this law. So one is actually being heard right now, oral arguments in an appeals court in U.S. federal court. It is likely to proceed to the Supreme Court within months. And if that happens to go against Trump, if the Supreme Court rules against him, which you never know with the Supreme Court these days, that could nullify pretty much all the tariffs that Trump has been talking about for months and months here. So that's kind of the big Occam's razor hanging over this whole situation. But it's interesting that Trump mentioned political stuff in this tariff announcement, because that's the justification needed under this law, is like a threat to the U.S. national security. And he's trying to get there with this. Whether the Supreme Court agrees, we'll find out.
So now Brazil is the U.S.'s 19th most valuable source of seafood. And when you look by the numbers, it accounts for over 39,000 metric tons worth $232 million in 2024. In particular, the new tariffs threaten U.S. imports of tilapia, red snapper, and rock lobster. So our very own Maria Feijó reported Thursday that Brazil's seafood industry is urgently seeking relief after the U.S. imposed the 50% tariff. And Maria is joining us now on the pod to share more on how the new tariff has triggered a sector-wide crisis.
Well, this is actually pretty serious. Just like that, no warning, no negotiations, and it sends shockwaves to the entire sector in Brazil. This is an industry where around 70% of all exports go straight to the US, so a move like this is more than just a disruption. It's a full-blown crisis. The Brazilian Association of Fish Industries, known as Abipesca, says roughly 300 million reais worth of seafood is currently sitting at ports, on vessels, or waiting inside processing plants. That is roughly around $54 million at the moment. A lot of this product is highly specialized for the American market, like specific tilapia cuts, which make up nearly 90% of Brazil's fish exports to the US. So there's just no easy way to pivot that back into the domestic market, which is already oversupplied and cannot absorb the volume. So now exporters are running out of working capital. They're calling on the federal government for an emergency bailout of 900 million reais, or around $160 million, with a grace period and a 2-year repayment plan. Without that support, around 35 companies could shut down, and 20,000 jobs are at risk. Now, what's especially interesting is the political backdrop. This all started with a letter from Trump accusing Brazil of undermining US democratic institutions. No real evidence was provided, but it was enough to justify the massive tariff, it seems. In the meantime, some states in Brazil are stepping up. Goiás, for example, which is a major seafood exporter, has announced its own emergency credit program. And on the federal side, Finance Minister Fernando Haddad has said Brazil will keep talking to the US, but also that the government is preparing its own emergency measures as well. There's also pressure building to reopen the European market, which has been closed to Brazilian seafood since 2017 due to sanitary restrictions. So that's now looking like a critical opportunity for diversification, because right now the industry is just too dependent on a single market, the US.
So Trump was very busy in the lead up to the tariff deadline. He also announced that his administration reached a new trade agreement with South Korea, featuring $350 billion in Korean investment and a 15% tariff on the country's exports to the U.S.
Yes, South Korea is the U.S.'s 17th most valuable source of seafood. It sends nearly 28,000 metric tons worth approximately $306 million last year. Predominantly, this includes toothfish, which I believe is a very popular product over there. So the 15% tariff, to be clear, it matches the rate that's previously been announced for Japan and the EU. And it's currently the rate that I believe is in place for Norway as well.
The list of deals coming in is changing by the minute here. It's currently Thursday afternoon as we're recording, and we're seeing reporting of deals with Thailand, which is a big seafood exporter to the US, as well as Cambodia and Taiwan, another seafood exporter, though its US market is somewhat smaller. And yeah, we're kind of waiting for the shoe to drop on a lot of these deals before the August 1st deadline. So the one country that seems to have avoided that deadline is Mexico, which just got a 90-day extension of its current tariff rates, which are pretty much nil. There are some products that fall outside of the US, Mexico, Canada, USMCA trade agreement that are being tariffed, but for the most part, including all seafood, there's zero tariffs on Canadian goods for the next 90 days now as they continue to negotiate a deal, the US and Mexico. And Canada still facing no tariffs, but it's not looking likely they're going to get a deal after Trump blasted the country on Truth Social this morning for its decision to support Palestinian statehood. Trump posted that Canada's decision will make it very hard to make a deal. So we will see what happens there.
Oh, Canada. That is definitely something we'll be watching, and I'm sure something will be breaking in our off hours because that's always when these things from Trump seem to happen.
There are no off hours, Amanda.
There
No off
are no
hours.
off hours. I was just about to say, if I would have just followed my own script. So the August 1st deadline has been looming for some time, and Undercurrent has been posting updates on the US trade war as quickly as they come in, thanks to our global team. If you're not subscribed to Undercurrent News, what are you waiting for? A quick word about WiseFish, our very first sponsor here on Catch the Current. WiseFish is a modern business solution built specifically for seafood companies. Whether you're in farming, fishing, processing, seafood sales, or doing all of the above, WiseFish helps you manage the full value chain in one place. They've been around for over 30 years. And fun fact, about 80% of Iceland's seafood exports are managed through the system today. Seafood businesses around the world use WiseFish to bring efficiency to their operations, improving everything from daily workflows to cost control, traceability, and sustainability. It's an integrated solution that replaces spreadsheets and removes siloed systems. You can learn more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent. So, I refuse to let the tariffs of terror dominate all the talk this episode. Another big story to break this week was Japanese seafood giant Mitsui Kor's plans to build a new processing factory to boost its frozen seafood and surimi output. Joining the pod to talk about Mitsui's big plans is Undercurrent's very own Masahiko Takeuchi. So, Masa, we were talking a bit about this while preparing for the show. You were telling me that this new processing factory comes at a pretty interesting time because Japan's surimi consumption is down, but fish sausage demand is growing.
Yes, exactly, Amanda. As you said, overall demand for surimi products in Japan is weak. Traditional items like kamaboko, chiku are not selling well, especially with younger people. But fish sausage, which is also made from surimi, like pollock surimi, is different. It's doing surprisingly well. According to point of sale data, that means checkout data from supermarkets and convenience stores, fish sausage sales rose by 11% in volume and 13% in value in the first half of 2025. This happened even though prices also went up by 2%. So, why is this happening? First, product is easy to keep and use. You don't have to refrigerate it and you can eat it straight away. That makes it popular for busy people and even for emergency storage at home after the COVID-19 pandemic. Second, it's seen as healthy. Some types include added nutrients like DHA or calcium. Mitsui also promotes the fast-absorbing protein from pollock in their fish sausages.
And third, fish sausage is getting attention online. Social media users and influencers are posting recipes, and some TV programs have featured it recently. So it's reaching a new generation of consumers.
Mitsui is responding to this shift. The company plans to build a new factory in Takushima City, Fukuoka Prefecture, Western Japan. Construction begins in August, and the factory is expected to be ready by the end of next year. This will be a large, modern plant with a huge investment. It will replace two existing factories in the same area and significantly boost the company's production capacity by more than 50% compared to the current level. The new plant will focus on making more fish sausage and frozen seafood. Some production will also move from Nisui's Tokyo Hachioji factory. Nisui says the new factory will use automation and digital tools to improve efficiency and safety. It will also be designed to lower energy use and reduce physical strain on workers. This investment is part of Nisui's long-term food business strategy in Japan called Good Foods 2030. The company wants to grow its domestic sales by focusing on products that are convenient, healthy, and suitable for today's lifestyle. So the fish sausage might sound like an old school product for Japanese consumers, but it's actually playing a central role in Nisui's strategy.
Thanks, Masa. So now before we go, there's one last story I want to talk about. And when I saw this, I just couldn't wait to talk about it with Lauren, because Lauren and I have this obsession with Red Lobster, despite being deprived of the iconic limited edition insulated Cheddar Bay biscuit fanny pack. Dan, have you ever seen this thing?
I'm afraid not.
I'm gonna insert this into the show notes. It's the most glorious fanny pack you've ever seen with your... It's insulated, Dan. Just strapped to your stomach.
It's not something I've considered. I mean, is it like, is food hygiene a problem with a fanny pack?
No, this is the problem with you. Lauren doesn't question the motives or anything. So forget it. Clifton, I was going to ask you to be my BSF, my best seafood friends, and gab with me on this final story.
I'm happy to. I'm worried my accent will be a bit of a downgrade.
Well, an egg-bearing lobster ended up in a Red Lobster restaurant in the U.S. state of Utah last week. A female egg-bearing lobster, they're illegal to harvest or sell under federal law in the U.S. So the lobster, who the staff at the Red Lobster lovingly named Claudia, packed up in newspaper and gel packs and shipped back to Maine in the hope of saving it from a culinary fate. But unfortunately, the story does not have a happy ending. Claudia died in transit back to Maine.
I'm not going to be able to fill in for Lauren, because I can't even imagine what she would respond to this story with. So I just have to fill in my own response, which is WTF. Like, why are we sending a lobster back to Maine? Just eat it, okay? It's all the way in Utah.
Eat it. It had the eggs.
Don't name it. Eat it.
Yeah, I wish there would have probably, like, there had to have been another way instead of shipping it. So it was like a 4-hour flight. So actually, I gotta backpedal. Dan, have you ever even eaten at a Red Lobster?
No, I haven't actually. In fact, I remember early when I first started at Undercurrent, I'd never even like been to or was aware of Red Lobster. So I remember once filling in to help out with the US newsletter and doing a pickup on, I think they were closing a store somewhere. And I thought, oh no, this small family-run operation in Florida, they're closing a joint. Ye oldie Red Lobster. That's terrible.
Oh, ye old Red Lobster, the small family-run business. That's cute. We're going to have to take you next time you're in Jersey. We have one by us. So I do want to say is that, okay, so maybe you're right, Cliff. Maybe the better solution here would have been just to eat it. Right now, the lobster died anyway. But I do like that.
Sorry to butt in here. Are we absolutely sure that this lobster, like the pilot, just didn't sort of take a break and then come back sort of picking bits of lobster out of his teeth? Oh, no. Oh, you won't believe what's happened. This Claudia, she's not looking good for her. She appears to have been boiled.
Sir, you have the lobster bib still tied around your neck?
I'm just putting it on the record. I would eat Claudia.
All right.
Just go back and get another one. Call this one Claudia. Say it was this one the whole time.
Oh my goodness. No, but I do want to say is that I do think it's really great that they educate their wait staff and their managers about sustainability efforts, because I think it is really important to share that. And especially now it's like spreading awareness. Now people know that Maine lobstermen notch, V-notch these female lobsters and toss them back. And the issue with this one was that it wasn't notched, and they think that it wasn't showing its eggs when it was caught and shipped to this Utah restaurant. What's really crazy is that this actually happened once before in Utah. I don't know why these pregnant lobsters keep getting sent to Utah of all places.
Mormon lobsters. You're right. I like the sustainability angle, the fact that these folks that work at Red Lobster can talk so knowledgeably about, I'm a Maine resident, I have a lot of pride for the lobster fishery here, that a sustainably operated fishery because of regulations like the one that Red Lobster did its best to go above and beyond even to adhere to, of throwing the pregnant females back. But that said, you're already in Utah. This one snuck through the cracks. Just don't send it back. Just eat it.
Just apologize extra time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Well, Cliff, Dan, I appreciate you keeping me company on the pod today and talking lobster. And we'll see what tariffs of terror await us next week.
Can't wait, Amanda. Woo, this is going to be a fun one.
Fun is one way of putting it, yeah.
Thanks for tuning in to Catch the Current. This seafood business is complex, but Wisefish makes it clearer and more connected, helping companies keep everything flowing smoothly. Whether it's aquaculture, fisheries, processing, or seafood sales, Wisefish powers smarter decisions, better traceability, and clearer insights every day. Find out how at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent.